Hey everybody, this is Michael and you're listening to Conversations with a Recovering Loan Officer, the show that is designed to help loan officers grow their mortgage business. We talk to top producers, marketing experts, and other inspiring people whose experience can help you reach your goals in less time.
Two additional points on it that I didn't quote. So the client came back and said, we'll risk it. Set realistic expectations about rate, about payment, about costs, about turn times. I've done this thousands of times. I know what it takes to get you to the table smoothly. All the realtors I deal with actively asked them when the last time was. I called them and asked them for a pre-approval. They're going to go, huh? I told you I had a massive heart attack in 2017. My business didn't skip a beat. Somebody stepped in and took care of everything.
This is sort of like the way you're approaching your philosophy of dealing with customers?
Yeah.
Hey guys, welcome to Conversations with the Recovering Loan Officer. Today I'm joined by Jerry Maguire. That's right, the one and only Jerry Maguire. Show me the money.
I know, never heard that.
No. Can I buy you in your picture? And it's also fitting considering that you are in the industry of lending people money.
How lucky did I get? Tagline for a popular movie, show me the money.
That's right. So tell everyone who's listening, who are you? What's your background?
Yeah, so Jerry Maguire, I live kind of wedged between Boston and Providence. I've been in the mortgage business since 1985. My start was as the photocopy clerk, so I was smart enough to press a green button. 5-6 years spent post-closing, processing, underwriting, did a little bit of everything before the market crashed in 89-90. By 91, became a loan officer. Been writing loans since 91. So what's that now? 32 years I write loans. You know, spent the most time, my last three employers, American Home Mortgage, vice president for 9 years. When they crashed in 07, made a decision to go to GMAC because they were the 800-pound gorilla.
Yep.
And that was good for a few months. And then it got really bad. I get out before they pulled the plug on GMAC. I went to Mortgage Master, which was a top producer's dream. And that became a problem in 2010 when they were taking more applications than they could close. And I looked around and narrowed it down to two regional lenders and ended up here basically because the owner was such a stand-up guy. Been here since 2010 and I'm a senior mortgage advisor now. I kind of love that title because that's really what I think I do. I'm when it comes to talking to a client, I'm a mortgage advisor, not a loan officer. I'm not a loan originator. And I'm advising, I'm giving them advice and they're making the decisions. And yeah.
So you're the mortgage advisor role, would sort of lead somebody to think if you were an investment advisor, that this is sort of the way you're approaching your philosophy of dealing with customers, as opposed to, I feel like a lot of officers can kind of get this turn and burn mentality where they're just working leads, dialing for dollars, calling people, and so just really investing in the relationships.
Yeah. So I can back up to one of the toughest decisions I ever made in this business was in 2010 when I left Mortgage Master working for a guy I love like a brother. Mortgage Master was... They were a great shop. They had great producers, but they just couldn't close what their producers were capable of producing. And I'll never forget, in February of 2010, I closed almost $5 million in a month. And it was the worst month I had experienced in over 20 years. And I went to the manager and I said, I'm done. I won't turn in another loan until I figured out what just happened. He goes, oh my God, you had a great month. This is awesome. Let's go do it again. I'm like, no. Not one of those clients will ever call me back. Everything closed late and ugly. I don't want to close late and ugly. I don't want people yet. So it happened again in September and I handed him my keys. I said, I can't do it like this. Closing a loan is too difficult to close just one. I want to close that loan so that everybody shows up at the closing table and it's an exhale. They're like, oh, hurry, we're at the closing table. And they're over the years referring me brothers and sisters and parents and cousins, and I'm in it for that bit. I don't want to close just one. I want to close your friends, your family, your coworkers. That's how I want to do it. I want to do this stress-free. It can't be I had a massive heart attack in November of 17. And I even talked with some of the biggest coaches with their coaching staff about stress. Like, you don't have to have stress in this business. If you do a few things really well, communicate with everybody in a transaction really well. Set realistic expectations about rate, about payment, about costs, about turn times, about what's next. And then the last is eliminate surprises. So stress, I've done this a long time, and I've seen a lot of guys do this a lot of different ways. I don't have stress. Like, clients aren't yelling at me. Realtors aren't yelling at me. Like, there are problems because I've done it enough. I know what stems. And I can tell the client, look, if you do this, 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 and this, I can predict what's going to happen. If you don't listen to me, if you don't do what I tell you to do when I tell you to do it, you're going to have problems. It's not going to go well.
Yeah, that makes it a lot easier, right? Everyone ends in the loop. They understand what's happening. And I think for a lot of loan officers, they have to retrain their mind on their communication style. I feel like the way you're approaching it, you have to play offense more in your business, right? By being more proactive with the communication. So talk to me about, like, how does, if I refer to you a customer today, what is your process for working with that borrower?
So I prefer to take the application myself. I know a lot of loss, and I was guilty of it. I think in 17 and 18, I started using a mobile app, and I pushed nearly everybody to the mobile app. I think what the problem that was created by the mobile app was, it wasn't as accurate, and I wasn't as into the transaction. I will literally take an application on a piece of paper, though, write it down, listen to the client, listen to the pauses, to the hesitations, try to read. Like, when you say, what's your address? And someone goes, that means something. What do you mean? Oh, like, how do you not know your address? Like, there's a story to that. What is the story? You got to find out what the story is so that you know which address you need to use to hold the credit. You can always put another one in the file to the underwriter, but this is highly emotionally charged. There's a ton of money involved. You're not always talking to the driver of the transaction. So you don't always know who the driver is. I can be in an office and hear another loan officer use the two words I hate to hear. Should be, or I should say three words. You should be okay. Like, we should be okay closing in 2 weeks. Well, you really need to qualify that with, like I was saying, that if you do what I asked you to do, when I asked you to do it, you'll be okay. Because I've done this thousands of times. Like, I know what it takes to get you to the table smoothly. That's what you want.
Yeah, that qualifying statement is something I don't hear a lot of loan officers doing. Actually puts the responsibility on their shoulders, because in my experience, the number one reason loans close late today is because the customers don't get the docs to us that we need to do our job.
Yeah.
And so it sort of puts that back on them. How engaged are your realtors in that process? Like, are they aware of when you ask for loan documentation? Do they help push this process, or do you keep their hands off it?
So it depends on the agent. Some, you know, it's like the loan officer. Some loan officers have a loan, and they've got this loan, and they take the loan to the processor, and then are you done? Okay, and then they take that loan to the, no. Some realtors are that way. Some realtors want to know every conversation you have. Some realtors don't want to. Like, get me involved if I need to do something. Like, the number one, I've done some business with one of the number one agents in the country. He does over 500 units. When it started, I didn't even know who he was. Like, that's embarrassing. For a guy who's been in the business 38 years, one of the top producers is literally a mile away from my office. I didn't know his name. And I was updating him about everything. And he finally calls me. He goes, hey, Jerry, I trust you. You wouldn't have this transaction if I didn't trust you. You don't need to call me every time the borrower sneezes. It's like, all right. So you got to kind of read the audience. I try to, at a minimum, let everybody in a transaction know what's up or ask how we're doing once a week. Once a week, I set that day aside as Tuesdays. Tuesdays are the days I deliver status updates or answer questions. Hey, got any questions? Everything okay? Processor? Communicate well. Some transactions need it. Some agents say, hey, I don't, tell me when we're clear to close or if we have a big problem. So it depends.
So you didn't know the top producer in your market. You mentioned kind of pre-show that in 2021, you had to rebuild the way you looked at your mortgage business. was the reason you didn't know who the top producer was because you weren't focused on like attracting real estate agents?
Yes. Yeah. Guilty. So this producer does 500 units a year, singularly licensed agent. So he didn't have a team of five guys. He was the guy. He had assistants. He had people that did show, not showings, but, you know, did the paperwork pushing and would show up for inspections, things like that. But he's only been in the business, I think, 6 years now. So in 21, you know, 20 was a refi boom, 19, 18, not so much. So he probably wasn't much of anything, 17, 18, but really came into stride 19, 20. 21, I watched rates increase a little bit. You hear the Fed say, we're going to stop buying mortgage-backed securities. You know rates are going to go up, which means the refis are going away. I also knew that the value of my database was going to drop. You know, so if you've got a database of 3,200 past clients and their average rate is 5.25%, well, when you're dropping 5.25%, 4.5%, 4%, 3.5%, 3%, like, wow, that was amazing. But when it starts going the other way, you're like, oh no. Like I've been living, not just living on refis. My purchase refi mix wasn't bad, but my past clients were feeding me really well. Like there were some years 90% of my business came from my past clients because I treated them so well. But I think it was the end of 21 when rates started their ascent from 3%, and I knew I had to create better relationships with realtors and financial planners and CTAs.
So to step back, because we'll, I'd like to get into the realtor thing here in a second, yeah. But I think the length of time you've been in the industry is a unique perspective for a lot of loan officers who maybe haven't gone through any sort of backward market. Yeah. Talk to me about each of the different mortgage recessions you've seen, starting in 99 or 89, 90.
Yeah, so 88, 89. I can't even really say I remember what the cause was to that downturn. I was in quality control and compliance at the time, and I had discovered that the top producer in a privately owned company was committing fraud horrifically, and so they laid me off. So I spent a few months out of the mortgage business, and then I called my mentor in the business, and he hired me as a temp. That seemed to be a supply-demand thing. That crash seemed to be, we just ended up with builders building too much. Then the next crash was 07, did I remember? In 07 was, there's a number, like you could line up just about every single industry involved in the transaction and place some blame. Wall Street, appraisers, loan officers, like I think everybody had a piece of that one.
Yep.
I really think the biggest blame was the ratings agencies that rated the guidelines. They allowed us to shop that. And if you could get something AAA grade, you could leverage it 32 to 1. Like some of the stories and movies that came out about it are only the tip of the iceberg.
Yep.
I think what really did the most damage was the reduced stock subprime 100% financing transaction. People say the crash of 07. No, it started in 05. I remember it starting in 05 because I had an assistant who brought in a ton of reduced stock 100% financing business. And it was the summer of 05 when his first payment default started to increase. And I got a call from our CEO saying, hey, there's something wrong here. I said, look, I trained him. We're like brothers. He's not committing fraud. He's not playing games with stated. He's doing no doc, no ratio. He was doing everything right. Yeah. I said, I'm telling you, it's the guidelines. He's taken those guidelines to the very edge with his clients. And he's just lining them up down the street. And every client who bought a no doc had a brother. And that brother didn't qualify. So he also did a no doc, but he bought more. And then the next one more, and the next one more, and the next one more. And as soon as they lost one of their four jobs, they couldn't pay anymore. So that's where it started. But through all of the ups and downs in rates, regardless of whether it was a crash, you know, kind of like we see right now or in 07, one thing I remember repetitively is When it goes away, it's like a light switch. When it's done, it's done. And I remember I was in Florida and rates had gone up 0.25%. We were at 3, we went to 3.25%. And I had a number of clients that hadn't locked or clients that were out shopping saying, we're going to wait for rates to come back down. I said, nah, this is different. The Fed is saying they don't want to buy mortgage-backed securities at the same level anymore. They've become the market. And if they're not going to be the market, mortgage rates typically are 2.5% above the rate of inflation. It's not perfect, but they trend in that direction. When inflation is 9 and mortgage rates are 3, the only way that happened was the Fed was using tax dollars. It was the unspoken stimulus plan. The Fed was buying mortgage-backed securities to stimulate the housing market. And I knew they were going to have to raise rates to do it. I don't think they're done. You know, they keep talking only a little bit more, only a little bit more. Inflation is still 5 and their target is 2. And mortgage rates are pushing 7.5. I think this is going to drag on a little bit.
Well, I hope you're wrong, but, you know, there's a lot of indicators to support what you're saying, you know.
Yeah.
And I've seen plenty of times when everyone's wrong. So moving into a very political year in 2024 with the elections coming up and everything, it's going to be, man, I don't know, because that's artificial, right? If the government tries to step in and try to control things on the mortgage side a bit more to help bolster the positive news of the economy and everything, and that's only going to create more problems in the next 4 years, which is kind of how we got to where we were, where we are today, you know? Right.
I get a lot of calls from my coworkers. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? I don't think the Fed's done it. I don't think it's one more rate. Their target is 2. We're nearly 5. They can't raise rates too fast because they'll crash the stock market. They're not going to crash the stock market coming into an election year. They're not. So they're going to be very slow. They're going to raise rates too much. Why? They always do. They're going to push us into a recession. Why? Because that's what you need to slow down inflation. It's not that they're going to come out and say, we're not done until we're in a recession. But they're going to raise rates because they need to slow things down. 5% inflation is not healthy.
No.
9% inflation is not healthy. So they need to get it down, and they will get it down because they have to. So they're going to raise the Fed funds rate too much. In my opinion, we're going to end up in a recession. And then when we get in a recession, rates will come down because recessions, you got to then lower rates to get the economy moving again.
I sort of feel like if we end up in a recession, that's the best case scenario.
I don't disagree. I think we need the market to normalize. I think the biggest question mark right now is the supply question. What is it that's going to get the homeowner who has a, we'll use me as an example. I've got a $600,000 home. I've got a mortgage rate at 2.5%. I've got a little over $400,000 in equity. My real goal is to have a dock. Well, the dock is a beach, meaning that's $1 million+ to get what I'm looking for. Boy, is it going to be tough to give up a 2.5% 30-year fixed rate?
Yeah.
What gets me to list my house? And there's been discussion about this in the past in different markets like this. Portable mortgage. Is that something? I don't know how they do that. There's a lot of, things on the answer. What is that?
Yeah.
What if I had a $400,000 mortgage initially at 3% and I sell this house, pay off that mortgage? Can I take that mortgage and apply that mortgage towards the next house?
So like a transferable mortgage, but not the homeowner, the home.
Yeah. It's been talked about a couple times in the past. I don't know.
It's almost like a personal line of credit.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get real crazy, do Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac survive this? There's only been 3 months since 2009 that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were able to sell a mortgage-backed security at a fair market rate. And that was the end of 2018. So at the end of 2018, Fannie and Freddie started selling mortgage-backed securities again, and rates went to 5.25%. It's been since 2009. What is that market now? What's the lowest ever in the future? Because now you have a mortgage-backed security where the government has stepped in and interfered in a private contract and said, hey, mortgage companies, You can't foreclose. And hey, homeowners, you can stop making your payments. What's that do to the investor in mortgage-backed securities that's looking for long-term, low yield, low risk? So maybe the risk isn't a prohibitive, but there's some risk to that. So I don't know. It's kind of funny. You talk about the way economists make predictions. They model stuff. Like, how do you predict where rates are going? There's nothing to model this. How do you model the recovery of a global pandemic that's never happened like this before?
I don't know. Yeah, there's all sorts of pressure, currency pressure from other countries, just not using the USD anymore for their traditional trade currency, and just all sorts of stuff that's never happened that you can't model. It's like the pandemic is a big thing. We don't know how that works. Okay, now China and Russia and Brazil and all these other countries, oh, they're not trading USD anymore. So that's never happened.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's...
Well, look at loan officers. Look at what the inventory has done. I know we've scrambled the numbers for Rhode Island. My company is primarily based out of Rhode Island. And at one point in time, I remember just crushing some numbers going, there's probably less than 200 existing single-family homes under $500,000 for sale in the entire state of Rhode Island. I had over 200 purchase prospects in my contact management system for people who had asked about buying a home in the last 3 years that, to my knowledge, hadn't bought and hadn't told me to stop contacting them. So it's certainly a unique problem where, okay, how does a loan officer who's used to, I mean, historically, you were a loan officer, you probably heard that you could survive in this business with 5 to 6 solid realtor relationships. Not today, you can't.
You need very solid realtor relationships.
We need 20, 30 plus, because that inventory problem is crazy. And then, advising clients what to do, the clients asking me, should I bid 50 over? I mean, there were times when I said to the client, I think it is okay. It's not the same answer for everybody, though. When rates were 3.5%, the Fed was saying, we're not going to buy mortgage-backed securities. And I remember I was in Florida, and I had a number of clients in the $400,000 bucket, and I still remember the numbers. I don't need to calculate. I remember telling them, at 3%, $400,000 cost $1,687. And if rates only go to 5, that's $2,140-some-odd. That's $500 more per month. That wipes out $100,000 worth of your approvability. So instead of looking at $400,000 houses, if you want to wait, start looking at $300,000 houses, because they're going to cost that $1,687 by the time. And look, I said, if we only go to 5, and here we are pushing 7.5, that's a crushing number. Yep. When you say to somebody, hey, now, you were under 1,700 principal and interest, and now it's 2,600 and change.
Yeah, my wife and I, we've been talking about trying to, instead of a dollar mortgage, like a farm, you know?
Okay, yeah.
But we've got the same scenario as you, you know? We've got a couple hundred thousand equity, 2.5% rate. We're just like, there's no...
I'll tell you, I came close one time. So we literally got married and built a house at the same time. This subdivision was the most reasonably priced in maybe 50 square miles, but it wasn't really where I wanted to be. I had only been a loan officer for 14 months, so they wouldn't use my income. So we qualified on my wife's income alone. So this wasn't quite, but it's 2,000 square feet. I've got a first floor bedroom, which I've converted to my office. So this was initially my bedroom. And I remember in 2005, so we bought this house in 93. And then in 2005, my daughters were 2 and 4. And I think I stepped on a My Little Pony one too many times. And I went, I need another 1,000 square feet. I need, because the living space was the first floor. Yeah. So we made, my office was this, kitchen, dining room, family room. So there wasn't a ton of living space on the first floor. So the kids were playing in the kitchen, the dining room, and the living room. And you step on one of those My Little Ponies one too many times, you get that horn jammed through your foot. You know, we started looking at 3,000 to 4,000 square foot homes. And there was a subdivision. The lots weren't as nice. The houses were bigger, but they had to put a much bigger house on that lot to make up for the additional cost of the lot. It was $800,000. And we were on our way to make an offer. Like, I was vice president of American Home Mortgage. I was making bank. It was crazy money I was making. We got halfway there. It's only, it probably not 4 miles from my house. Halfway there in my head, I'm thinking, we've got $200,000 in equity. If I put that down, that's $600,000 at 6%, that's $6 per thousand, that's $3,600 a month, principal and interest, taxes, insurance. Oh my God. There are some years I didn't make that much. Called the realtor. I said, look, we're out. Turn the car around.
Smart.
Get to the house. I turned the car around, like in a 2 mile drive. I got halfway there. I went, you know what? Had I done that in 05, I'd be out of the business because I would have lost everything. I mean, 2008, like I'd paid more in taxes this year than I made in 2008. 2008 was worst year for me. This year would be number two, but it's funny. Closings are off, but I've never felt better about my position in the market. I've got 38 years in the business. I've got a value proposition for agents that isn't send me a buyer, send me a buyer, send me a buyer. It's, hey, I've been here 38 years. I've never hurt you. You're not going to find anybody I ever hurt. How can I help you? Like, what do you struggle with? Process? Software? Are you considering a virtual assistant? Like, I can get you some coaching. I have a coach, and his specialty is coaching realtors. Like, if you have a topic he hasn't covered, he will find the expert to come in. He's really just the facilitator of the trade. Like, he'll bring in, you know, you want to use a robo dialer. He'll bring in an expert on robo dialers. You're thinking about a virtual assistant. He's used, and I've used virtual assistants. He'll bring in the guy who owns the company to talk about virtual assistants.
Yep.
You know, it's different. You got to be better, right? Like, I now challenge my realtors. Got somebody better? You've got somebody with more experience, with a better reputation, who's never hurting you. You should use them. Like, you should. Like, your clients should get that level of service. I'm in the community. I've been here for over 30 years, and I've never hurt anybody. Actually, one. I hurt one customer. I fixed it. And the realtor, whose girl I used to babysit, and it was a rural housing loan. I didn't know the program.
Oh, yeah.
I quoted the flat rate. Everybody else at the time was adding on to the rate because they were more work and nobody really specialized in it. And there was a girl in our area who specialized in it. And I asked the girl, I said, please go to Sue. Please. Sue is the rural housing expert for her. And she quoted a rate that had two additional points on it that I didn't quote. So the client came back and said, we'll risk it. And they got the claim the night before their commitment was due. Now, her husband was a veteran, and I didn't know that the ratios were really tight on rural housing. That fixed it, got it closed. It was delayed maybe a week. But geez, if that's the worst I got to say for having made mistakes, I hate conflict, so I try to set this up. Like, I'm not going to kick a problem down the road. There's a number of loan officers that will tell a client almost anything to get them in process, knowing that once you're in process 2 weeks, that problem will rear its ugly head, but you're in process. They're going to get paid.
Yep.
As much as I love getting paid, I hate conflict more than I love getting paid.
Well, and it sounds like you were smart. You kept your fixed costs low. So that you could make the decisions that let you live up to your moral standards.
Well, have you heard the loan officer prayer?
No.
Dear Lord, please let there be another refi boom. I promise not to spend it all again this time. So I have violated that a number of times, but this last refi boom, I was smart. Everything got paid off. I'm in good shape. Like, even when American Home crashed. When American Home crashed, I remember looking at my wife because it was pretty scary. It was 07. My youngest daughter was 3. My oldest was 5. Talking about scary. And I looked at my wife. I said, hey, if we had to cash the 401k, we could live for 5 years. It's not going to happen. Like, we don't know how bad this is going to be. I don't know. But this could end real bad. But we're okay for a while. So you just got to be smart. Like, there are a lot of loan officers who want to bought themselves their McMansions and their Mercedes. And I don't know if you've heard this number, 180,000 loan officers in 2021. It's down to 90.
Yeah, it's supposed to get down to 60. That's what I heard. Which makes sense because the pie's getting smaller, you know? And
yeah,
this means the people that like attrition, if you're healthy and you stay in it and you keep working and you create good habits and you move through the process like you're doing, you rebuilt yourself as somebody who brings unique value to realtors and you're out there prospecting new relationships. And like, that's something you didn't necessarily have early on as a skill set, because you said your past clients were constantly feeding you due to how you treated them.
I wasn't a great salesman. I was a great technician of the mortgage process, and the clients that came in saw that and referred me friends and family. I wasn't really big on the calling the realtor, hey, Mike, it's Jerry. Did you have an open house this weekend? Did you run into somebody that wasn't pre-approved that maybe I could help? I'll give you a list of all the realtors I deal with actively. Ask them when the last time was. I called them and asked them for a pre-approval. They're going to go, huh? I was never comfortable in my sales suit, but I'm comfortable helping people. Like, that I can do. Like, and I think I'm good at this. I think I've got some value to add. Geez, you know, come up with a problem I don't know how to solve. I'll find someone. Like, I'll find a way. Like, I love solving problems.
So we only have like another minute or so.
Yeah.
And a lot of what you've talked about, I love it. But some of what you said, like, is going to be difficult or impossible for, let's say, somebody who's newer in the industry, let's say 5 to 10 years to replicate. You can't, a 5 to 10 year person can't go, I've been in the industry 38 years and I've never heard anybody. That's not a value proposition they can come to the table with.
The best advice I could give a loan officer who doesn't have decades of experience, be okay not knowing the answer. It's okay not to have the big database. It's okay not to know all the guidelines. It's okay. But if you tell a realtor you can do something and then don't do it, realtors will forgive. I don't know. Like, hey, Jerry, what's the maximum loan to value on a 3-5? I shouldn't say I try not to remember those things. I don't remember those things. I don't know. But I'll look it up and I'll get you the right answer, because what I don't want to do is tell you the maximum is this, and then you call the client and say the maximum is this, and then I call you back and go, oh, guess what? I was wrong. So be okay not know. It's okay not to know everything. I don't know. If I 38 years, I don't know everything. Like, it's they joke about law school. You go to law school to learn the law, by the time you get out, the law changed. Well, same thing in our industry. If you don't think that what we're going through right now is going to change our guidelines are going to change. Like, the big crash, all the foreclosure guidelines and credit score guidelines, they all change. You don't have to know them. You have to know where to go.
Yep.
And don't overpromise. Like, I've talked a lot about eliminating stress in this business, and it's more about providing service. If you, like, I don't know if we talked about it here. If you communicate well with all parties in the transaction, if you set realistic expectations and eliminate surprises, you're going to be a rock star, because your competitors are. Your competitors, some of the best producers I know who have done crazy amounts of business, are struggling right now because they went around telling people they could do everything all the time, and they blow deals up.
Yep.
Because they were great salesmen. They got deals in the door and they're the flash in the pan. Like, treat people right. Like, give them honest answers. Like, what's your rate? It's difficult to talk today about rate. What's your rate? Well, you know, the bad news is rates are up. The good news is they're very likely coming back down. So chances are, we do this right, you're going to be doing this again and refinance into a lower rate.
Yep. You got to treat that client right, though.
Yeah, you got to treat them right. If you treat them right, they're coming back. Like, I'm looking at all these clients, I'm writing over 6% now. Going, this is a twofer. Like, we're getting it into the purchase now. And look, you can look at history. The Federal Reserve has a history of going too high, keeping rates too high too long. We get into a recession, then rates come down. So we're going to get there. Like, the best economists in the business are predicting, yes. And that also explains why there's such a big difference right now between a 1-point rate and a 0-point rate. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, USDA, they all believe those rates come down. So a 0 point rate doesn't have a lot of value to a servicer because it's a high rate and they know it's going to refi in 12, 18, 24 months when rates come down.
Yeah. So if you're a loan officer and you got to pick up the phone and start calling people, how do you open a conversation, Jerry, with a realtor?
My favorite open with a realtor now, and I'm going to give Scott Hudspeth credit for this one, is we started this during COVID. Scott started a mastermind call during COVID, and we got together, started out as 20 of us. It grew as big as 300 before Scott went out on his own. And he says, grab a piece of paper. They say, hey, Mike, do you mind if I write down your answers to this question? I want to know, like, an agent of your stature probably has a guy, and you got a guy, I'm sure. What are the top three things he does to help you do more business? And I'm going to write them down. Like, what are the top three? And most of them respond the same way you are right now.
Yep.
Just like, what? They close my loan? No. Not they close your loans, they return your call. Like that we have to do to be loan officers. What's he doing to help you do more? Like, you're giving him your referrals. You're giving him your buyers. What's he doing to help you do more business? Is he doing anything to help you do more business? I've got seven things I feel I can offer you between training and marketing materials and list reports. And I used to use HomeBot. I gave up HomeBot and feel it was helping me as much as it had been. Lead gen, I've got old clients that are orphaned by realtors that have gotten out of business. They call me and say, hey, I need to list my house and buy a house. Like, what better way to earn the respect of a top producing agent than to say, hey, I asked around, you're the top dog. I've got a client that wants to list and buy. I mean, nowadays, that's over $1 million in business. That's 25, depending on the agent, where they are in the year and what percentage of the split they get, that's $25,000 to $50,000 in commission for $1.2, $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Jerry, it's been awesome talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, I appreciate your time today, and I love this year in the background around like how you've been through the different cycles in the industry and the positive thought about, hey, you know, it's going to happen again. You're going to make it through. And yeah, I remember when I was at APMC, I also ended up at GMAC for about 30 seconds and then ended up at Countrywide. And that was for like 30 seconds plus 30 seconds. To then
I'll tell you, American Home was a great company.
Yep.
I think what put us out of business was mortgage brokers. The mortgage brokers we were allowing to use our subprime product that weren't using it ethically. I think in the retail channel, we were okay. And I don't know, somebody would have to show me the numbers. Like, I could figure it out. But, you know, then I went to GMAC and that was a nightmare. And then I went to Mortgage Master. It was great for a while. Then that was a nightmare.
Yep.
And then came to Province and, you know, not perfect. But I'll tell you what an amazing sales force. Our platform is really good. It's not the platform of some of the big names, but some of those big names spent almost $1 billion creating their software packages and their contact management systems and their marketing platforms. We didn't spend $1 billion. I told you I had a massive heart attack in 2017. My business didn't skip a beat. Somebody stepped in and took care of everything. My wife battled breast cancer in 2016. I was out of work every Tuesday and worked from the house every day, every week on Wednesday. I did more business that year than any year on 4 years sides of that. And it was because of all the help I got from the loan officers there. Like, everybody stepped up. And I remember that. So when somebody needs help and they call me, I drop what I'm doing. I help them. And, you know, we're going to be okay. This is going to be tough. There are going to be people that disappear and get out of the business, and it'll cleanse us a little bit more because the strongest ones are going to survive.
Yep. Jerry, thanks again.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Take care.